Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with Hector Galán, the director and producer of the new documentary Children of Giant, which will premiere on PBS tonight. It's all about the movie Giant, directed by George Stevens. Amazing movie. James Dean's last movie, Rock Hudson, Elizabeth Taylor, but the social implications are so much more. One of the first movies to deal with racial prejudice, in this case, along the Texas-Mexican border towards Latinos. So before we get into the documentary, tell me a little bit about how Giant was just, you know, so ahead of its time. I mean, this is before To Kill a Mockingbird even. I mean, this is way ahead of its time in dealing with this stuff.
It was, Jason. You know, growing up in Texas, I was born and raised in West Texas. We always knew about the movie. Our parents, you know, would talk about it. And then later as we grew, you know, we watched it. And it's really one of the very first films. And now, of course, a classic film that dealt with these issues of discrimination towards Mexican Americans and some others as well, such as feminism. You know, it was one of the early films that, you know, Elizabeth Taylor's role was very much a feminist, an early feminist for a Western, you know, that you normally you didn't see that, and class divisions.
Yeah, there's that scene where she goes up to all the boys that are, you know, kind of the old boys club talking, sitting in their mansion, and she comes up and says, "Why can't I be a part of this?" It works socially on many levels.
Oh, absolutely. She calls them Neanderthals.
Yeah. You know?
But, you know, and then James Dean, of course, his character of Jet Rank in the movie, he represents, you know, the new wealth. Mm-hmm. So, and the class divisions and, you know, when Edna Ferber wrote the book Giant that George Stevens based the movie on, that adapted the screenplay, people just were very upset here in Texas with Edna Ferber. They didn't like the way she described Texans, you know, and they didn't like her because, you know, she was a little tough in her descriptions and the caricatures of Texans that she wrote in her book. George Stevens took her book and many of those elements, pushed it even further, especially in the areas of racial discrimination.
Oh, absolutely. Young Dennis Hopper bringing home a Mexican bride, and he loves her to death. And his mom, the Elizabeth Taylor, is a little more progressive on such things, is, you know, open arms to it. But Bick Benedict, Rock Hudson's character, is a little more hesitant. Then there's the scene where they're in the diner at the end, and a family of four Latinos comes in to eat at the diner, and they're refused service, and it starts this big brawl. And then finally, in the final scene, Rock Hudson finally comes around, you know, laying in Elizabeth Taylor's arms and looking at the baby crib. And there, you know, there's one brown skin baby and one white skin baby with a white sheep behind and a black sheep behind. And there's all this symbolic stuff going on throughout the movie. You know, talk about him as a director, not just adapting, you know, what's written on the page, but to be able to visualize it like that, like in that final shot.
Yeah, to me, nobody has really answered correctly what the purpose of the black sheep and the white sheep behind the two little babies were, but that's one of the interesting things of George Stevens. But, you know, George Stevens, I really admire him. You know, he was your typical director doing comedies and things like that, and it was after World War II. You know, he was one of the people that gathered all that color footage he went in World War II because he went to document all that in the Signal Corps. Mm-hmm. And of course, was there for the liberation of Dachau, the concentration camp. And I think that that's what changed him completely. So when he came back, his whole world vision had changed. I guess mine would too, if, you know, I experienced that. But his movie, of course, was Shane, when he mm-hmm. got back. And then, of course, it was Giant. Mm-hmm. And right after Giant was The Diary of Anne Frank. I mean, mm-hmm. these are very, very powerful things. But another interesting thing about George Stevens when he was doing Giant was that he took some of those scenes that was written in the page and pushed them and changed them. Mm-hmm. You talk about the diner scene where he's, you know, defending his daughter-in-law and those people that are being kicked out because they're Mexican-American. That wasn't in the book. He created that. George Stevens created that scene. Also, there's a big scene, and we spend time on the scene in the documentary of the story of Angel, who grew up on the Riata Ranch, the Riata Empire.
Sal Mineo.
He played by Sal Mineo, and they went to him and Bob Days, which was Earl Holliman, went to war, and one of them comes back, you know, and welcomed in the giant, huge party, and the other one, Sal Mineo character, comes back in a coffin. Mm-hmm. In Edna Ferber's book, he comes, Salminio, the played Angel, comes back a hero and a rebel. Well, and I agree with George Stevens, by changing and having him come back in a coffin and buried in a segregated cemetery, mm-hmm. it just stresses and really shows how these people were sacrificing their lives, but yet being treated as second-class citizens upon their return, even though they were defending America. To me, that's a very powerful scene.
Yeah, it's such a powerful scene to see that, you know, that coffin come home, and it kind of speaks to that idea that, okay, I can fight and die for this country, really give the ultimate sacrifice, and yet you can't afford me basic human rights, basic decency. It really is one of those most powerful moments in the movie. Before we get to the documentary, real quick, you mentioned the you think that no one has truly interpreted the sheep at the end. What's your take on it?
You know, I really don't know. I guess to me, it was just very interesting. You know, when I was really looking at it, what that means. There must be a subtle statement.
I think to me, I just related it to the kind of racial harmony that you see in the skin color of the babies in the crib. That it's reflected in the animals behind them. I don't know. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
That's how I always took it. There's little details like that throughout the movie. I've even noticed when I interviewed George Stevens Jr. the other day, he said he didn't notice this point, so I could just be totally reading into it on this next one. But if you ever look at it again, there's the scene where I think Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor are arguing. They're in the house, the mansion, and they're arguing about whether, I guess it's when Angel is a little baby and they bring a white doctor to treat him. I think they're arguing about whether she should be even involved in that poor neighborhood of Mexican Americans. And when Liz Taylor is saying, of course, we need to bring the best care, you know, it doesn't matter, skin color, let's bring the best care to this baby. George Stevens shoots her in this really beautiful, you know, just well-lit shot. But then the second that we cut for the reaction shot of Rock Hudson, who is more closed-minded to the idea, it's noticeably darker, and it goes back and forth, almost jarred my eye watching it. But that might just be, you know, film theory reading into it too much, but I wouldn't put it past Stevens, actually.
No, you know, there's some things in there that, you know, George Stevens shot so much film that he could have made, you know, four features, because he would shoot and shoot and shoot.
It truly was
giant.
There's
one scene where Leslie Benedict gets off the train for the first time to this horrible dust storm. Mm-hmm. And then in the next scene, this dust storm's, you know, it's just gone. You wonder, yeah, what happened to the dust storm? So there are things like that in the movie that are fun to catch, like the Texas flag, for instance, is backwards two times. One time when it's hanging on the outside of the house, and then when they put it over when they give it, when it's with Salminio during the funeral.
Do you think that's intentional? Because the idea of it being backwards could be symbolic.
It could be. I mean, these things that are really interesting to catch, you know.
And lots of stuff where he's focusing on, you know, the cowboy boots and the hats. It's almost these symbols of the old world. And even in the opening when Rock Hudson's taking the train and kind of driving past, I can't remember if he's driving past horses or something, but I feel like there's an image early on in the movie where there's this, you know, the old way versus the new way, the progress versus the tradition, and it's there. He does it so many times visually, not just in dialogue or, you know, something more obvious. It's kind of subtly in the background that you can chew on these juicy little details, like you're saying, you know, all these decades later.
He's like a Stanley Kubrick. You know, he would do that all the time. He'd put these symbolic scenes that you had to, you know, interpret somehow, you know, that maybe he was doing the same thing.
Well, that's why I think he's, you know, I personally think he's kind of underrated. I mean, I know he's up there with the greats. He's in that upper echelon already to start with. But, you know, when you talk about Kubrick and Hitchcock and John Ford and, you know, Scorsese, all those great masters, like, I feel like George Stevens absolutely belongs up in there. And, you know, maybe your documentary will help continue to stress his importance. So let's pivot to that a little bit. So it's called Children of Giant. I have an idea why you called it that, but let's talk about just from a pure title standpoint. Are we all children of Giant in ways we don't even know, even in people that haven't seen the movie?
You got it. That's really, really what I meant with the title, because not only were there's actual children that participated in the actual making of the movie, you know, as extras, and there were there's witnesses that were witnessing, even though they didn't know what the storyline was until it came out. but they were witnessing their lives unfolding at that time in that summer of 1955. And the fact that George Stevens opened the set and let everybody come forward, Anglos and Mexican Americans, anybody who wanted, there was this intermingling. Everybody was on their good behavior. Most of the cast and crew that arrived had no idea that that town was completely segregated, completely. Wow. From public accommodations to even when you die, you know, to a segregated cemetery. And that was very common in Texas, in towns and cities across the Southwest in the 50s, and segregated schools and everything. They had no idea. So they are, both of them, Anglos and Mexican Americans, are children of that time and what has resulted since.
Absolutely. Talk about your decision to you said you go to the actual, what's the name of the town again?
San Angelo, Texas, where I was born.
Okay. So this is kind of a something you've lived with your whole life. First of all, before we even go into that, when did you first see Giant? When did you experience it?
I didn't experience it. I was 2 years old when that movie was filmed in Marfa, Texas. Actually, it was filmed during a 7-year drought. They happened to come to Texas at the worst time, and we suffered. I was 4 years old before I ever saw rain. Hey, what's that coming from the sky? it was strange. But, you know, my dad would tell me these stories because he lived that. He's the one that was forced to go to segregated Mexican school. When I started first grade in San Angelo, by that point, the schools had been integrated. And even though, you know, I would get whacked for speaking Spanish by my teacher, she'd make me put my hands on the desk and she'd whack them with a yardstick in the first grade. And so I got a tail end of that. But I was familiar, very familiar with the stories. And that's what drew me to this particular story. I was kind of afraid of it, though, in a way, because of Giant, the movie. I knew that Giant had been in Texas, and you asked me how old I was. It was later, when I was in my teens, and people would tell me about it. And so, you know, I watched it. It's a 3-hour movie, a 3.5-hour movie. So, you know, you got to devote some time to it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I was drawn to the story because of that. And I knew that the people, and I had heard through colleagues that they were trying to create a Texas historical site out of the segregated school. But like I mentioned, I was kind of afraid of Giant itself to overshadow that particular story that I was interested in telling about a segregated Mexican school. But as it turned out, the more I looked at it, you know, George Stevens was doing the same thing. And it's amazing that he was doing that 60 years ago. Oh, this summer will be 60 years. And some of those same issues that he was tackling are still with us today.
Yeah, how much are we still fighting that battle? I mean, first of all, how far have we come? Because, you know, it would be almost too pessimistic to say nothing's changed. So what all has improved, but also how much farther do we need to go?
Well, you know, the blatant discrimination that was occurring at that time against Mexican Americans and African Americans, we've overcome a lot of that. But even to this day, in Marfa, Texas, there's still a segregated cemetery today. Wow. And, you know, there's a fence that separates, a barbed wire fence that separates both sides. And there's a group of people that want that fence torn down because of what it represents.
It's like a Berlin Wall of sorts.
Exactly. Tear it down, you know.
Tear down this wall.
But, you know, the whole question today of, you know, immigration and hot button issues such as immigration and the Dreamers, you know, and the children along the border and just in general, you know, it's still, I mean, we're still looked upon by many people as being somehow different, like, you know, strangers in our own land.
Like a black sheep.
You know, I was born and raised, and so was my father, you know, and grandfather in Texas. We're Texans. Mm-hmm. But yet, we're still, by a lot of people, looked upon like, hey, you know, where did you come from? Well, we came from here.
Absolutely. More recently, I think it was like last month, we came on the 20th anniversary of Selena's death, her murder. And, on the occasion, I kind of popped that one back in because I hadn't seen it in a while. And there's that great scene where she's a little girl. This is before J-Lo enters the scene, but she's riding with her father in the car. And he says, you know, hey, we have to be like doubly on our game. You know, we have to please our Spanish roots. You know, we need to learn Spanish and be able to sing these songs. But then we also need to be able to win over the English crowd too. And of course, unfortunately, she was murdered before, you know, she could truly cross over into that. But is that something that you have felt your whole life too? That you need to be doubly on top of your game in terms of that in an unfortunate way? It's like, why can't you just have to deal with the same obstacles as everyone else? Why do you have to be fighting two battles at once?
You know, that's a very interesting question that you raised, because, you know, Selena, for instance, was born in Corpus Christi, mm-hmm. which from that area, Edith Whataburger. She's as American as anybody could be.
Absolutely.
She didn't even know how to speak Spanish, really.
Absolutely.
She learned it later. And then when she did die, what was telling, because of the press that it was generating, a lot of the mainstream press thought she was from Mexico. They were calling Mexico. You know, they didn't realize she was an American citizen.
Yeah,
which is interesting, because there's this disconnect.
Well, that leap to that idea says a lot. Just the very fact that they would leap to that assumption.
Exactly, and you know, and we're all willing, myself included. You know, we're all assimilated. I mean, we assimilate into the melting pot of America. We like to maintain, you know, traditional roots and respect that, and that's why I do this movie. I think that Children of Giant, when people watch it, it's not something that hits you over the head or trying to a revisionist history or anything like that. It's a highly entertaining piece. It's one of my favorite films that I've worked on. It truly has a lot of magic, and I'm just so happy that we still have a PBS, you know, and a series like Voces, mm-hmm. Because the PBS, and I've always told people we should treasure it, because that's the place where you can still see movies like this. And, you know, I'm real happy with this. Mm-hmm. But it truly illustrates what you're asking about us, you know, Latinos. And, you know, Latinos are not a homogenous group. We're different. We're Mexican-Americans and Cubans and Puerto Ricans and, you know.
Exactly.
You know, even today when like, for instance, Rubio is announcing for president, mm-hmm. the people automatically assume that because he's a Latino, he's going to appeal to all Latinos, you know.
Right.
We're so different.
Yeah, it would be the same as if someone would, you know, see someone of, you know, of fairer skin and just assume, oh, you're Irish, not German or Norwegian. What, you know, I mean, there's a million different kinds. You can't paint it with one broad brush.
No. Not at all.
So
I just hope that young people watching this, both Anglo and then Mexican Americans, will see it and will understand what people like my dad or the previous generation, what they had to, you know, what they had to go through, you know, to achieve in this country, all these barriers that were put up that had to be brought down, and they can see the human spirit, you know, against adversity. That's what I was trying to prove with the Children of Giant.
Absolutely. And, you know, and one of the things that, you know, I've obviously seen, I'm a huge fan of the movie. I've seen it multiple times. The thing that I think Stevens did really well is he absolutely criticized the South at the time for its prejudice ways, whether it was by race or with some of the women's rights issues that are raised in the movie too. It doesn't hold back at all in that. But at the same time, it, in the end, it comes to a place where it says, hey, you can be from the South. You know, you can be proud of the cowboy boots and the horse riding culture and the ranches and the oil fields. You know, it can be part of this Southern heritage, but let's become giants and be even better. You know, there's a better way. We grow and we change. There are great aspects to Southern life that can be improved upon if we settle these social issues. Like, to me, when I watch the movie, I don't leave it feeling anti-South. I leave it feeling, hey, there's a better way for the South. Do you get that vibe?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting observation on that you're talking about there, because, you know, for those themes to be seen by American audiences in 1956, you know, we talk about feminism and racial, problems and class divisions and the whole thing, was pretty groundbreaking for George Stevens. You know, had he not been an independent, if he were part of the studio system, that wouldn't have happened, I don't think. But as an independent, he had all the power to do it. But I do think that he didn't flinch, but at the same time, he did pull back a little bit. He could have made it stronger. He didn't. And what a lot of people remember of the movie Giant, maybe that's why it's so successful, is that they sort of downplay audiences, you know, like especially here in Texas when it came out, they go for the big land, the big sky, the Texas myth, mm-hmm. the whole thing. And Juana, and it becomes sort of like a footnote. I was looking at, when I was doing research on this documentary, I was looking at a lot of the publicity and a lot of the things that were coming out around the time when the movie was being released, and there's hardly any mention of Juana.
Is this the Dennis Hopper's wife character?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she plays a Mexican.
Right.
But for us, as Mexican Americans, she was like major, mm-hmm. even though her role was small.
Right.
That's why we brought her back from Mexico City, and she's in the movie. She's in the documentary.
Oh, that's fantastic.
She comes back, 58 years later?
Wow.
And then it's just an amazing... it's amazing to see her as elegant as she still is. And she was 16 when she played that role. But what I was going to say is that was important to us. Mm-hmm. So it worked both sides. You know, people were happy finally in the end. You know, they were all worried because of Zena Ferber's book. But then they liked, you know, the cattle and the cowboys and James Dean and mm-hmm. all of that. And then Juana's role, you know, became sort of like, you know, that happened. But for us, it was major. And, you know, ironically, the kids and the people that acted in the movie, when the movie came out, they had to see the movie in segregated theaters.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The movie theater aisle literally was the aisle that was not being reached across at the time.
Mm-mm.
So that's why I appreciate you putting together a documentary like you did, because at the time there was this segregated movie theaters, and you know, it was received one way when the movie came out, God, almost 60 years ago. But you know, watching your documentary, and then maybe people will rediscover the movie now and we'll view it in a totally different light. And a lot of things that they were talking about in the movie will seem, you know, almost prophetic and ahead of its time. And yet hopefully also remind us how, you know, much work we still need to do in our own daily lives, in our own daily hearts, you know? So I really appreciate you putting it together.
Well, thank you. You know, and it really is an entertaining movie. I mean, the movie, I love the movie Giant too. I'm with you. And I do think, you know, because we've had several screenings here in Texas with audiences, and everybody that sees it said, I've got to go see that movie.
Absolutely.
That hadn't seen it, you know?
Well, and it's got these major movie stars. I mean, not only, you know, James Dean's final movie with his, you know, Last Supper drunken stupor scene. It's kind of tragically prophetic. But there's just it's almost one of those where everyone says, how have I not seen that? You know, it's, you know, everyone's seen Gone with the Wind, but I think this one needs to be right up there watched with it. It's in a way, it kind of answers a lot of things left unanswered or questions not even posed in Gone with the Wind, you know?
Exactly.
But very similar spectacle type movies. But I think the title of Giant is one of those good ones too that you get to chew on. You know, it's, you go in thinking it's called Giant because it's, you know, it's a giant movie, 3 hours, major spectacle, wide shots. But in the end, in that final conversation where they're staring at the babies, you kind of reveal what Giant actually is, and what's it to you? I know what it is to me. I mean, it's how can we become personal giants? You know, it's a do the right thing type thing.
Right, and if you remember the opening title, Giant is like giant, huge.
Oh, the big block letters, like it's Ben Hur or something.
Exactly, but you know, we had to it's funny, the original film Giant still holds up. I mean, it doesn't. There's only a few spots that feel a little bit dated,
right,
you know,
right.
But not really, I guess, because of the setting, you know, because it hardly changes, you know, the whole cowboy culture. But we wanted to use a little bit of the music from there, but that really would give it away. So we redid the music in Sofia, Bulgaria, with a 57-piece orchestra that just is, oh my God, the music that on Children of Giants is incredible, that the people will see tonight. On the documentary, it's a throwback to the time of the classic Hollywood, you know, but yet it has modern sensibilities, you know.
And what do you think it was about that? I mean, that year, 1956, was also the year John Ford made The Searchers, which, you know, on the surface, okay, typical cowboy and Indian movie that you'd watch a Saturday afternoon with your grandfather. But then when you look at it again and again, it's really examining racism towards Native Americans. I mean, how do these two massive movies, both kind of set in what would typically be the Old West. How do they both come out in 1956? What's bubbling here? Is it because we're kind of, you know, I guess Brown versus Board of Ed was maybe 54 or something like that? But
53.
What do you think's bubbling in the, you know, Western pop culture that brought that up?
Well, you know, I think that year, late, you know, post-World War II years, there was a lot of changes going on. And what strikes me is that, for instance, we talk about the segregated Mexican school that was there in 55 when they were filming that summer. It took 10 years for that school to be finally shut down. And how many years, I mean, when you're dealing with interracial type topics, you know, those were groundbreaking. I think there had only been one film that kind of dealt with it a little bit, but very different. It was called Pinky in 1949. But how many years did it take before we saw Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, you know, after Giant?
11 years after.
Yeah, so there you go. You know, and it was just groundbreaking, I think, at the time. But, you know, what McCarthy was happening, the hearings, you know, all of that. There was a lot of change happening. 60s were coming. Maybe that all has something to do with it, the way people were thinking. But I do think that that George Stevens really changed after what he witnessed in World War II to become much more of a humanist and taking on these social justice themes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, before the war, you know, he was a huge director in his own right. He directed probably the most famous Astaire Rogers picture ever, Swing Time. But like you said, as soon as he got back from the war, I mean, it was A Place in the Sun and Shane and, you know, Giant and Diary of Anne Frank. It really, I don't want to say they became darker, but more serious, more complex.
Yeah.
Original sins and old wounds that he knew we needed to stitch up as a society before we could even move on. And like you said, 11 years before In the Heat of the Night and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and, you know, and 6 years before To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, this guy, he was in tune with a social conscious and, you know, a humanist well before it was cool, to so to speak, you know? So hats off, cowboy hats off to George Stevens and to you for putting this together. When can we watch it? What time?
It's going to be on at 9 o'clock. 10 Eastern, 9 Central tonight, PBS. Tune in. It kicks off the first of the Voices series, which is, you know, becoming a signature series on PBS for Latino-themed stories, which I'm real happy for.
Do you know if it's going to... if for some reason people miss it tonight, you know, maybe our younger viewers who may be out on a Friday night, if some people somehow they miss it, which you shouldn't, there's a DVR now. Come on, folks. You absolutely got to tape this thing. But if they do, do you know if it's going to re-air anytime, like next week or?
Well, they can go to pbs.org and watch it, because starting Saturday, you know, it'll be up for a couple of weeks.
Oh, awesome. They can watch it in its entirety online after this.
In its entirety. Yeah, that's the beauty of and, you know, I do streaming myself, you know, it's becoming pretty commonplace, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's the new way.
It's the new way, yeah. And so that's a smart thing that PBS is doing.
Awesome. Well, hopefully everyone will check it out tonight on PBS anyway, but then maybe we can go revisit it over and over again online and find the, look at all your cool stuff you have buried in there, like Stevens did.
Yeah, you know, but it was really nice talking to you, and I can tell that you know your movies.
Hey, well, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's sort of a labor of love. I mean, I'm sure you're bitten by the same bug. And this movie signifies why. Not only is it this crazy artistic expression with these directorial techniques we're talking about, it is this social change agent like no other. I really truly believe it.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, very happy that you spoke with George Stevens Jr. He was great. You know, George Stevens has been a help to us from the get-go, and he knew the importance of what we were trying to do. And I'm kind of a little bit, he was actually there, you know, watching this. Yeah. I mean, part of history.
Yeah.
Which is really incredible.
Yeah, he had photos all on his wall in his office and posters, and I was like, man, that's you've lived quite the life to be the son of, you know, Hollywood royalty like that. And then in his own right, founded the American Film Institute and and interviewed all these great film. Oh, it's incredible. Is he in the movie much? Like, how much is he in the documentary?
Quite a bit. He walks us through, and you know, and gives us some really insight into what was going on, you know, and what his father was trying to do. And he was on the set a couple of times for, you know, 2-3 weeks. He was in the Air Force at the time. And he is incredible. He's a great storyteller himself, and I think he gets that from his dad. But he was a tremendous help. And Earl Holliman, you know, one of my favorites. I grew up watching Earl, you know, Police Woman and all of that. He's fantastic. And then Elsa Cárdenas, you know, and there's very few people that are left still alive that were, you know, either cast members or people that actually participated in the making of Giant.
Yeah, so, Elizabeth Taylor passed away a couple years ago, right? Rock Hudson was early 90s, and James Dean didn't even live to see the movie. So,
He died in September. I mean, they packed up in August, right?
Yeah.
To Hollywood to do the interiors there, and he died the following month in a car crash.
Yeah, he was, I think East of Eden was the only one that came out while he was alive, and I think Rebel Without a Cause and Giant were both posthumous. So yeah, it's a real treat seeing him alive on screen, and like you said, hardly anyone is left. So I really appreciate both, you know, George Stevens and you taking the time to talk to me and continue the legacy. I think it really is an important movie everyone should see, and they should check out your documentary tonight as well.
Thank you very much, Jason. It was great talking to you.